Should we, for a few minutes? Maybe I should just switch it off.
Or maybe you should just pay more attention. So yeah, that's me. I work for WolfSSL, I do curl. I'm actually the president of the European Open Source Academy. That's my Mastodon feed. Okay, so I work on this little project. I started it a while ago. We call it curl. We do some fun stuff with it. So 27 years and a little bit. We started out, you know, in the fine year of 1996 when I found this tool on the internet to download web pages. 100 lines of code in 1996 is now roughly 180,000 lines of code. So we've had a journey. About 1,400 authors that have authored commits that were merged. We are around 20-25 authors per month that show up and bring code. So, and all in all, then people that have also reported bug, helped out, run infrastructure, run tests, blah, blah, blah. 3,500 humans in the list. So, small, big, I don't know. We've been around for a while. We're a handful of people that are actually maintainers, maybe a dozen that actually are allowed to merge. But okay, we're a tiny project, we do things. We end up in a lot of places, right? All of these are actually things that run curl or libcurl. So put in another way, every one of you run my code like three times in your pocket, in your car, fridge, printer, games, yeah, whatever, right? 20, 40 billion installations, kind of amazing, right? So it runs everywhere. But we're still that small project. But nowadays, I mean, beyond just, that's just curl, right? Curl is just one example, just my baby. But in general, everything today runs on a lot of open source. We do things on top of open source, right? This is how you do anything, any device, any service, any tool today. You have some custom stuff, sometimes proprietary, sometimes open, but everything that runs on a lot of open source, right? It is literally like this, even though people like to point out that icebergs don't actually float like this. A bad iceberg, it'll actually tip. But anyway, I prefer to say it more like this. You know, there's something on top and a lot of open source. Or, you know, you can't do a talk about open source without talking about 2347. But anyway, we're a lot of people in Nebraska, right? It's not just me. I mean, I'm not that guy because I'm not in Nebraska. But there are a lot of people. There are a lot of people, a lot of projects, certainly, that are sort of can identify with that little piece of. And when you identify, or you just happen to become that little piece in the XKCD, security becomes, well, doesn't have to be more important, because if it's just open source, you do it for fun. But so I don't know. I don't know how you feel, but 20 billion installations, sometimes it gives a little bit of a sense that you should take security important. I mean, you should care about it. You should try to make things better for the entire world, right? Because quite a lot of things run, use, depend on your code. And then when security, I mean, in any open source, I would imagine that for most open source projects, security is more important than a lot of other things in the project, right? When there's a security problem to deal with, the other stuff gets to pause because security is more important. It trumps pretty much everything else, highest interrupt priority of them all. And maintaining open source, right? Looking at the entire world of open source, if you like, there's like, what, a million open source projects or something? 10 million. And most, the median number of maintainers in all these projects is one, right? There is often a single maintainer. And lots of these projects, a huge majority of all these open source projects out there, we do it as a spare time hobby. So we're also struggling to actually get time and energy to do anything. A lot of open source projects, of course, underfunded because of everything, and always a lot of outstanding tasks, right? There's a lot of things we want to do in a project, but we haven't just gotten around to do it, right? We all have that because it never ends. There's always things to do. We move around. We don't have the money to do more. We don't have the time or energy or whatever. And so that leads to that a lot of projects then struggle with burnout. People actually, struggle under the pressure. 20 billion installations. What do you do? And making open source secure, there's really no, I mean, it doesn't have to be open source. It's the same thing for whatever you do. If you want to do anything that is software and you want to make it secure, there is actually no silver bullet. There's only engineering. And you just do things like you write easy to read code that you can understand, that you can review. You test that a lot, as much as you possibly can. You throw all the tools at the code, scan, parse, understand, blah, 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 find anything, and then sometimes you do bug bounty. In my case, I have at least traditionally and before today said that bug bounty is actually kind of a cool system because it's actually get a lot of people interested in finding things in your project because you attract them to your project with an offer of money if they actually find something terrible. And if they don't, you at least got them to investigate, check your code, help out, you know, more eyeballs on the code. That's good. I mean, if they didn't find anything, you don't know, but if they found something, you fix that, you improve, you move on. So a bug bounty is a great way to actually reward people, to actually get people in there. Sometimes even professional bug bounty hunters, right? They do this for a living. So it truly gets people there. When we started the curl bug bounty 6 years ago, it was a noticeable inflow in people that were actually suddenly giving our project more attention that they hadn't done before because of the money part. But of course, it also gets some other people. But I've always considered this as a good thing, right? Finding problems is a little bit of a soul-crushing experience every time, right? When they point you in the eye and say, why did you do this stupid thing? And it feels really bad at the moment, but fixing it, improving it, iterating again, shipping it to all the world is a general good, right? Even if though it hurts in the moment. So we started this a long time ago. Nowadays, we receive 2-3 submissions per week. Sometimes a lot more, it's unknown why. But anyway, each report then sort of comes in, points out the potential security problem. We as a team receive it, we spend time to actually understand what do you mean, how can you reproduce, can this be exploited, blah, blah, blah. It takes a few man hours, typically per issue, 2-3 per week, per times a few man hours. And typically, rubbish reports tend to be really fast to just dismiss. A stupid person runs a stupid tool, gets an output, sends that to us. We can just, stupid. Close, not applicable, go away, and we move on. Minutes, seconds, dismissed, move on. Not a lot of time wasted. And I mean, people are people. This has been a fact for a long time already. I mean, this happens to projects even without bug bounty reports. Like people submit stupid things, but usually not a big problem. But people get help with this, right? This thing, entered a while ago, and there's this great book that I'll show you in a second. It's completely wrong order here, so I'm completely confused. Well, the bug bounty, we pay up to $10,000 for a critical security problem. We never paid this much because no one has ever actually reported a critical vulnerability in curl since we started this. We had two critical, but but we have paid $92,000 in rewards so far. Quite a lot of money, especially for an open source project, right? Who has that kind of money? I'll tell you how in a second. But this has then resulted in 81 confirmed security vulnerabilities, CVEs and everything. Excellent, right? Because it has improved the project, fixed the code, we ship better. The world is then ideally slightly better, safer after this. Great, right? So $92,000 for 81 confirmed security problems. That's a pretty good trade-off. You get a lot for a lot, not that many, much money. And all our, we're fortunate we're sponsored, so the Internet Bug Bounty is paying all of this. So the Curl project, we just asked the IBB to pay money. So it's an excellent situation for us. Everyone should have a great sponsor. I can recommend. Anyway, so this book came out. Actually, it's an old book, but it's a fun book, I think. I like the title mostly. But AI and AI slop has, of course, been a notable trend in our project. So it works like this, pretty much. You're a helpful individual out there in the world. You think, I can help out. There's a bug bounty there. I could certainly find a problem. Or when I say I mean me and my chatbot. So I'll just ask the chatbot for a problem, because surely it'll find one for us, for me, and I can report it. And the second part is, of course, very important, and you should make it sound alarming. I don't know why, but people tend to like that it sounds really terrible. But anyway, if you do this, and you know, the AIs, they won't say no, there's no flaw, I don't understand, go away. No, they will deliver something for you. And it'll sound really alarming. And in many cases, I think, you don't really know this code, right? You don't actually know what the AI now told you. You know, it's a huge report, it sounds alarming. I'll send this to the Curl project. And it always provides this, right? You can go, I mean, if you go and ask the chat now, it will most likely tell you a security problem or three in Curl. And it really works like this, right? Because, hey, chat, you help me out with this. And then, wham! Everyone can help us out with this great, whatever it is. I like slop. So anyway, they all report lots of things like this to us, but virtually nothing of this is true. It doesn't exist. It's just a lot of words. And how do you know this? How do you know when you get a lot of slop? And actually, from the beginning, it wasn't easy, and of course, 2 years ago, this didn't happen. So it was sort of, all of a sudden, people started to send lots of bug reports. And how do you recognize when there's slop, right? It's just English. But it's very polite. No, humans are not polite in general. And you know, especially when you find a bug in a project, people don't say, excuse me, I'm sorry, but I think I found a problem. No. They tend to be more like, stupid, you're wrong, you should. But the AIs are never like that, right? They're always, you know, and in particular in follow-up questions. So what do you mean? This doesn't seem right. And then you get a follow-up. Oh no, excuse me, I apologize, blah, blah, blah. And always like that. You know, no human ever speaks like that. So that's certainly the biggest trigger. So when it's super polite, then you sort of, oops, what is this? And of course, perfect English, no typos. I mean, I would never do that because everything I write is littered with typos, but never from the AIs, right? And they always speak in this mixed case things. I don't know why, but it's like it can't write English without doing mixed case, all the titles, everything. And I mean, yeah, some of humans do that, but not consistently all the time. Every time, this is the big sort of AI alert. This is no human writes like this all the time. And of course, the regular M dashes every once in a while. It's sort of complicated to add an M dash in the text for a normal human, but AI is really good at it. And as I mentioned, so long, you know. And it's so helpful, you know, it summarizes and these are blah, 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 blah. So it's, you never get a short, small, tiny, to the point report from an AI. It's like hundreds and hundreds of lines, examples, blah, blah, these are the risks and what to do about it, what it could lead to. And of course, a lot of bullet points in every little section. Bullet points, bullet points, bullet points. So, and usually actually, all of this, of course, combined. So a report with all of this, you know, this was not a human. And I mean, usually it doesn't really matter, right? If it had been right, it didn't matter. I mean, would be great if someone pointed out the problem with an AI that was actually correct. But yeah, so when you then ask a question, so they report a thing, lots of things, right? I don't quite understand. And you ask a follow-up question, and then it, of course, apologizes. And there's another, you know, overly polite and friendly and huge response again. And then you start to realize people don't do this. If you ask a question, they tend to answer yes, no, or, you know, I clarify this little point that you ask about. The AI tend to retake and blah, 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 blah. It's a talking machine and apologizes. And then when you've done, you know, you asked a few questions, that is sort of lost track of the initial report, and it can easily go in another tangent, you know, and it sort of start to talk about a different bug than the one we started with, because it's sort of been deluded and tricked into another corner. It's super weird. But yeah. So, and since we get these, and I mean, the AIs here, they don't report this themselves, right? It's not actually the AI that submitted this. It's actually a human involved here. So a human has asked the AI, and whenever I ask something, the human asks the AI, right, and copy-pastes back the answer. So indirectly, I'm talking to an AI with a human in between somewhere. So of course, sometimes the human confuses things by entering a human answer in there. So it's not always crystal clear if I'm talking to an AI or human, or which, you know, which kind of mix it is here. So it's not perfectly possible to tell for sure when it's an AI and not. But it really works like this. So a lot of salespeople tell the world that we can do this with AI. The tech giants tell this, and a lot of people actually think that they help out. So maintaining in general, when you maintain an open source project, there's a lot of things to do. When you work in an open source project, I mean, all projects are in some ways unique, but we also share a lot of things. So when we, you know, I maintain open source projects, there's a lot of things to do in a project. Sometimes we even do feature development, actually. But that box, the sort of that shrinks over time, and then lots of the other boxes grow over time. And as I said before, one of the boxes tend to be a little bit more important because the world just expects you to take that seriously. And I guess that's fair at some point. So in a typical day, which might look like this, right? Maybe not a 12-hour workday, but I tend to say like this, some of those hours are actually spare time, so it's not actually work hours. But anyway, so there's a lot of things to do when you maintain an open source project. But of course, so then these slop attacks come, and there's a lot of more security work. It sort of tends to make everything else less important and get less time. You have to spend a lot of time figuring out, what does this report mean? This sounds super serious, and is it? I don't understand. I need to understand, debug, run test cases, figure it out. And if you want to, I mean, there are literally examples coming in almost daily. So there's a lot of things, and there are a lot of different ways the AIs can trick you up. But here's a favorite example of mine that is just shows you to sort of the length this crazy stuff goes. So this is a bug report on curl, submitted to HackerOne, which is our bug bounty portal. So they are submitted in private, right? So just the curl security team gets this. This sounds super serious, you know? Penetration testing report, stream dependency cycle exploit. That's bad, right? Exploit. There's a lot of details here. A novel exploit leveraging stream dependency, blah, blah, blah. Curl tested on version 8.13.0. Yeah, so he's tested it. This is exploit. Sounds bad. He shows a little example here. You just do this. Run. You should patch this test server to be able to reproduce. Fine, that's what you do, right? In order to reproduce a bug, maybe you need to patch the test server. That looks great. I mean, this is a guy, he's serious. So run this, and here's another piece of the test server. Just run that, and here's an example when he runs it. GDB, args, curl, and the example here, and he shows, he sets a breakpoint, he runs it, he gets a crash, in an address. All of this looks great. I mean, this is how you debug a C code, right? This is what I do daily. So this, yes. But wait a minute. So R15, register in the CPU, shows contents 4141. Yeah, that looks like an ASCII string. Okay, weird. Why would, okay. Recursive call to the, okay. But risk summary, bullet points. Wait a minute, who writes bullet points? Okay, all of this, yeah, this sounds, this guy has really dug in, found an HTTP3 problem, and found something, but the function doesn't exist. So, wait a minute, a GDB output, when it put a breakpoint on the function that doesn't exist, GDB output, register contents, nope. It's completely made up, it's because, I mean, it's never run. The patch on that test server doesn't work. It's all made up. The test server doesn't work. The curl doesn't crash. You can't run this. So wait a minute. All of this is just made up. From the second, I mean, the title is wrong, the content is wrong, the examples are wrong, the patches are wrong, the crash dumps are wrong. Everything is just, yes, if you made this for a TV show, it would be great, right? But actually, So nothing, you know, and in this case, I think I spent hours, at least a few hours, you know, just understanding that report, asking a few follow-up, before I noticed that function name started to grepping in my, wait a minute, this function name, I don't recognize it. Maybe we changed it, I don't remember. Grepped for it, no, it doesn't exist. You know, I checked the code history, it never existed. So yes, this is a, and really, it is, of course, a total waste of time and energy, and not only the sort of, it's exhaustive, you know, it's sort of a mind-numbingly stupid exercise chasing something that someone invented for us. Yeah, and I was going to say that, I mean, TV series are actually much better at doing curl hacks because they tend to be believable and actually work. These are different places where curl has been used in different TV shows, and they're actually, you know, they're all working, actually. Opposed to the slop. And I should, of course, say that, I mean, stupidity is not, you know, exclusive in AI, because we're humans, so we get a lot of this, you know, we found your Git repository online, please fix. Thank you. Thank you for telling me. And sometimes they find, they often also found the .git directory in my website, which also has the public Git directory. So we get a lot of reports. So, you know, people are helpful and, you know, information disclosure, they tend to find problems in the test suite. We have a key somewhere or in example code. We have people keep reporting that you can access files with a file :// protocol. Which is made to read files, like, right? But if you can also read files with it, yes. Last week we got that again. So yeah, and then the typical old one. I run the tool, it says something, I report it all the time, you know, even though the tool might be wrong, right, or whatever. But, you know, people try the shortcut to, I guess, get money for it. But it's rarely a good idea. Anyway, so this attack, or continued attack, or all these friendly reports, it really, of course, reduces our activity elsewhere because we have to spend a lot of time, you know, again and again and again, we get to start over. What is this huge report? Is it AI? Is it slop? Is it sensible? And we don't dismiss reports just because it looks like slop, of course, because it might be genuine. And we have, of course, a lot of people who are actually using translators or the way people tend to sort of hide the AI nowadays is that they say, I'll get to it, but now we ask people, disclose immediately if you used an AI, just, you know, to get our lower our expectations. But nowadays they say, I found it, but I used an AI to generate the report. Then, you know, What do I do with that? Then, okay, that's sort of an, yeah, that's why you have a lot of bullet points, right? And that's why it's mixed case. But maybe that makes the problem more real. I don't know. I think people mostly say that to sort of hide the fact that they actually used AI all the way. But it really, you know, it makes us really tired and just, you just want to close and throw away everything because, okay, a new report, fun, get away. And it's really burdening on all the people involved doing this. So it certainly may impact project quality, and it may then sort of end up a supply chain issue in that it may actually make us miss real stuff and make us not do real stuff that we otherwise wanted to do, right? So there's certainly a risk of that. And why? Why? I'm so stupid. Is it the money? I mean, sure, if we give away $500 for a security low report, so maybe it is that. We, as I said, we offer 10,000 for a critical one. No one has ever got that. So maybe it is the money. But, so at the same time, it doesn't really feel like that. I think a lot of people actually think that they help us here. I mean, the tool told them, there's a bug here. There's a bug, I should report it. The project will be happy. Yeah, and they actually think the AIs do this. So yeah, the AI told me, here's a bug, I will report it. So as I said, it's not a zero or one here. Is it AI or not? Nowadays, almost everything is to some degree AI. So it's more easy to say that it's too often than exactly how often. But it's roughly somewhere around 20 to 40% of all the submissions right now. And the submission rate is certainly going up. And my feeling is also that people use these and sometimes rewrite the slop in their own language to avoid it to appear as AI, because I think the general quality is going quickly downhill, which means that people are sort of, we get more reports than ever, but the quality is way worse than ever. And I don't know why, it's just stupid. So, and the exact rate isn't hard to actually assess, but it did not, this problem, it didn't exist 2 years ago, right? It didn't, just didn't happen. So what do we do with all of this? Sort of useless action, ban the reporter. Most of these reports come from a first-time reporter anyway. So they created an account, reported this, and we banned this first-time account. It's sort of completely useless action because, of course, they will create another one if they want to have another one. And we report them to HackerOne because we use HackerOne then as our platform for this. HackerOne has a sort of, I could possibly call it lukewarm interest to do much about this. HackerOne themselves has an AI engine to help out with analyzing stuff. So they're sort of, I don't know, which side of this game they're on, actually. And they certainly don't take my sense of urgency very important. I mean, they don't really care. They don't respond to my emails very often. And so, yeah, as I mentioned, we require upfront sort of that they state that they have used an AI just so that we can, you know, raise our flags and dismiss them easier. But I think that just makes them sort of, it just makes users try to, you know, have excuses. I just generated part of it when an AI, blah, blah, blah. So this doesn't really help. It's the same crap. But at the same time, we're an open source project, right? I want to do everything in an open source project like Curl as open, approachable as possible, right? Everything should be open, transparent, accessible for everyone. I'll get to things that we don't do, but I want it to remain accessible and available for anyone to submit security problems, for example. So I don't want it closed down. So what we don't do, a lot of people say we should insert prompt injections. So we should, you know, insert funny things in comments somewhere. That'll make the AIs do something. I think, okay, it's a fun thing to say, but it would just be stupid and probably extremely short-sighted. It probably will work once and never again. And we should use AI to detect AI. First, it's sort of pointless. It's not the AI we want to detect, it's the crap we want to detect. And it's really hard to detect the crap sort of automatically. You have to sort of understand a little bit. So we could add something that the AIs would find and report, and we would find. Also short-sighted, they will sort of work around that immediately. We should charge money for the right to submit a security report. Could possibly work, but we would also just shut off a lot of legitimate possible reporters, at least. So possibly that, somehow we need to add friction to this process, one way or another. But we're working on that. So yeah, and then people say, we should automate the testing and verify it before we even consider it the bug, right? So make sure that it actually is reproducible or something. But suggesting this, that's sort of, then you haven't really worked with security problems in a project like this, because, you know, when you run on 100 different operating systems on 28 different CPU architectures, there's no way we can run whatever you say in a VM. And, you know, architectures different. And most, nowadays, when most people actually find a problem, it's mostly like, I found it in a code, it could possibly execute it in these kind of conditions, in this kind of this needs to happen first and then that, blah, blah, blah. Often super hard to reproduce, even for the reporter. So requiring that it would be reproducible in a VM first, that would sort of also be like charging a lot of money. It would just remove a lot of legitimate bugs. But there's also, of course, the providers of this. Wasting time should be a violation of terms of use, of course, so HackerOne should really strike down much harder on these ones. And I mean, the GitHubs and all the others should as well, because this is not unique for HackerOne, it's not unique for security reports. We see this slop trend is happening in regular bug reports as well, everywhere in open source, so it's certainly not, this is a trend going really wide. And reputation systems, like on a system like HackerOne, it doesn't work because these are first-time reporters. So it doesn't matter if I ban them, block them, report them, expand, their reputation is hurt, but they don't have a reputation to hurt. It doesn't matter. The only one who cares about reputation, they are the ones who have been there for a long time, and they're not the problem. So it doesn't really work like that. So what possibly work is that if we would require something more, proof of work, knowledge, intelligence, something out of the reporter, maybe. It's really hard. And of course, the way I want to do it is to basically just not allow persons who, you know, if you created your account yesterday, I don't want your report. I want you to just sit there and wait for a while, perhaps, or something else. At least up the threshold a little bit. Make it a little bit harder, because I think that scaled the best. And of course, I want these service providers to actually take this problem more seriously, because I think we're only seeing the beginning of it, and I think we're going to see it more widely going forward, because it's so easy to generate, so hard to take, to receive. So yeah, it's not really about AI at all. It's just about the abuse, right? You can do the same shit without AI. The problem here is AI makes it so easy. It produces so much with so little effort, and people actually think they do this for the right reason, right? Because before AI, you were more or less aware when you did something bad, right? People still do bad things, but they know it, and they're just bad people. Bad people exist all the time. They don't go away. But, I mean, nowadays, the number of sort of in-between people, they just think they're doing good, but they're in reality, they're bad much more, and they actually cannot this sort of separate the truth from the lies, and they actually think they're helping out. So, but yeah, sure, human-created slop is also a big problem. So can AI be used for good? No, someone said here. I'm more of an eternal optimist here, so I say, sure, yes, possibly. But we don't see a lot of proof of that, right? People always tell me, yeah, but you have to give it time, you know. Yes, sure, give it time, but there's not a lot of proof of it or signs that it is actually going in the right direction. I think, as in always, sure, I think actually AI can be used for good, but you have to have a sort of a clever human involved there. You have to read output, sort of filter off the crap, extract the good parts, and use that in the report. I think you can do good stuff with that. But so it'll take a long time before you can just ask the AI, find the problem here and report it. It's gonna take a while. And then just sort of all of this, the slop part, is sort of, it's another dimension to this other AI part, of course, that I'm just gonna mention that. So on the curl website, we have, this is a normal month in bandwidth spend. That's 65 terabytes. And this, the graph is per day amount of bandwidth. So that's 4,000 requests per second to a static site, basically holding what? Documentation, Torbal downloads. What are people doing? They're not downloading curl anyway.
But they're using curl.
They might be using curl. Luckily for me, we're sponsored by Fastly, so they sort of eat all the bandwidth, so I don't have to care a lot about it a lot. I can just, you know, roll my eyes, and I don't have logs either, so I can just see how they torture the servers out there and say, what are they doing? I don't know. Anyway, going forward, will they improve? Everyone who's on the sort of AI LLM side, they will say, yes, sure, they improved yesterday, it's going to be great. Maybe they will. I'm sure that they will continue selling the myth at least. So, I mean, everyone was already before convinced that it was a good thing, they will do this great, and that will continue. And humans are not likely to improve. Then I'm less of an optimist, more of a cynic. Humans will still, you know, they will help us out. They will continue to help us out. So in our short-term future, we will maybe not close it down immediately, but we are going to do countermeasurements. So that we don't like HackerOne's treatment of us, so we're probably going to move away from that when we probably might try to, you know, remove the money incentive. We will try different things to sort of reduce this wave of unwanted reports. We'll see. We need to experiment a little bit because we also hear from a lot of other open source projects without bug bounty, right? And they get a lot of crap as well. So maybe it's not the money. Maybe it is something else we need to do to stop this. I think we need to somehow add friction requirements, thresholds for this. Somehow we need to work and experiment a little bit. But we basically cannot take it like this, because it's such a burden on the people in our project that have to take care of this. I have a little collection. It's mind-numbingly stupid. I think there are 25 of them. I mean, that's more an exercise for you to read a few of them, and then you'll understand. It's super stupid, most of them. Very long, very many bullet points. But in the end, of course, open source survives, and this is just a blip on the entire thing. So I'm sure we'll come out ahead of this, and this is not going to break us this time either. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your great talk. Are there any questions?
Thanks for the awesome talk. You mentioned that this sort of slop only started 2 years ago and has been ramping up. I wanted to ask if you're familiar with the AICC DARPA challenge that was funding people and companies in the US specifically to use AI to find bugs in open source and automatically report them, and if that's connected. And they just had a big announcement at DEF CON last week, so.
I'm sure there are many sort of efforts, attempts, and projects going on to use AI to find security problems. I'm not aware of that, and I've not seen any results of that. But okay, I will spill the beans and tell you that right now we have a security bug in curl confirmed from a big company, and I'm pretty sure they used AI to find it. So that's going to contradict everything I said here today. But I think, in general, I think it's actually not contradicting. It's more, I think, as with everything, if you have clever humans involved, I think the AIs can actually help a lot, at least by sorting out, maybe narrowing in, finding areas to look at closer. So I think they can help. I think the problem starts when you sort of hand everything over to the AI and think that it's going to go all the way. So I think people are going to find a lot of use and help from AIs going forward as well, actually.
So during your talk, you've occasionally referred to the use of AI that generates AI slop as human stupidity, and sometimes you called it an attack. So per your assessment, which side of Handlin's razor are we actually on here, mostly?
I think the attack is actually unintended. I think it's a lot of sort of... I think the attack is mostly just that from the company selling the myth. So all the poor users that are actually attacking us, they're just innocent, complicit participants in this attack. So, but no one actually wanted it to happen like this. I don't know really where to land and what to call it.
You mentioned earlier a thing that I've also heard, that bug reports on GitHub and so on and so forth have become better quality since people started using AI, because there are people who where English is not the first language, they're not as fluent, they're not as eloquent, whatever that might be, and that actual legit bugs have been reported with the help of AI that you mentioned earlier. Yeah, we used AI to write the report, whatever. Have you seen those legit, not only security vulnerabilities, but actual bugs where you knew, okay, this person clearly used AI, but it was a legit report. They just used AI because of the language barrier or whatever.
No. People still use AI or translation services, but I don't think that has been going on for a long time, long before we even called that AI. We just called that translating. And I think people are still translating, and I think that's good for everyone who's not good or feel confident in English. So I think that's, of course, just great. But I don't sense an improvement. I don't sense an aid from AI in general.
Hello. There's just one thing I want to clarify. In general, this is not a new problem with someone making a bogus report, right? It's just like the AI emphasizes a pre-existing problem. And I think this is important to mention, because all it does is emphasize the bad behaviors that were there before, because it's much, much easier to create a big report that sounds serious, right? And in your presentation, you showed that you were against detecting AI with AI, but what about, for example, just as an example, having an AI agent that actually runs the code, and it would be pretty easy to see, okay, there is actually no function of that name, right? And the last point is, you are certainly not the only one with that problem with bogus reports of any kinds, not only security. What if open source developers could stick together, work together on a general solution that fixes a problem like this in general? Do you think that might be maybe one of solution?
But that's why I'm talking about the providers here, the platforms that we all are on and using for the bug reports and the security reports. They are the ones that we need to work together with to raise the bars or set the requirements and give us the tools so that we can, for example, as a community, say that this person clearly is an abusive reporter, we could ban him from all projects, why just not from one? And I want to say that the difference between now, people have been abusing this forever. I mean, we're humans. Humans are mostly annoying. But not mostly, but a lot of users are annoying. And that's not new. The new thing here is not only the ease that you can produce this with AI, but also these they actually think they are helping out. They're not the bad, they don't think they're the bad guys. That's the new thing here. The huge portion of users actually think they're all helping out here. They're just unknowingly becoming the bad guys. And that's the new part, because that wasn't like that before. Then we're only the 5.2%, 1.5% stupid users, and they're still there. But now we have a large portion of users just helping out. And that's the new part.
Hi, I'm here. So, quick question. So, you've kind of said, I think, that this isn't a technical problem, it's mostly social. And how do you basically go up to a person and then tell them you're actually in the matrix, you've been lied to, that kind of thing? Like, how do open source developers, how are open source developers supposed to deal with the problem where you go up and tell people what you're doing is not actually okay?
Yeah, how do you tell that? I mean, how do you ever tell a person that whatever you're giving me now is not wanted and it's crap and your life choices are wrong? It's really hard, right? Because you want to be polite, you want to be friendly, you don't want to. And as a someone who's sort of the face of the project, I don't want to be rude. I don't want my comments to be quoted and used as a scare sort of example of my project. So no, I try to be friendly. I try to communicate, stick to the technical issues, and then ban them and stop the conversation.
You're assuming that most of these requests are with a good intent, but I mean that might be because I'm not dumb as fuck, but if I add an issue, then I only add it if I'm able to reproduce it, or
great,
at least I write, okay, I have this bug, it happens whenever, but I can't reproduce it yet, I will try. And if you really think they are acting on goodwill, then you could probably try to spread the knowledge that if you can't reproduce it by yourself, it is not an issue.
Yes.
And I really don't think that it's only goodwill.
No, it's certainly not only good intentions. That's for sure. But I also cannot blank say that if you cannot reproduce it, it's not an error, because if. You know, if they really point out the problem, it is an error. And I want to be better than that. I want to take care of, and if you point out the problem to me, I want to fix that problem. And if you have a problem to reproduce it, but you can clearly point it out and explain why it is a problem, I think it is a problem. I don't want to artificially raise the bar and say, it's not a bug if you can't reproduce it, even though we all can see that it is a bug. That would be wrong too. So I don't know, it's really hard. I want to make it hard for the abusers, but I also want to make it easy for the ones who are actually saying, well, if you do this, it's going to crash. Yes, it does, then it's a bug, we fix it.
Hi, first things first, thanks for curls, thanks for keeping it running, appreciate it a lot. actually, question is, out of the legitimate bug requests, how many of them are actually repetitive reporters? Because my naive assumption would be that the real high-value bugs reported would come from some sort of experts which may have been submitted something already, and probably idea could you leverage that probably in, you know, get these people onto a list and make new reporters convince one of those first to be eligible? I don't know.
That's sort of one way towards a solution, right? And so that you have to have some kind of phase in which you're not allowed to submit a report or convince or have someone very sort of vet it before you're allowed. So yes, we have discussed that as well. And I just want to say that, yes, pretty much all the really most important security problems are reported by repeat sort of reporters. So we have, I think, almost half of the amount we have paid has gone to the same individual. So that's certainly so, that few experts are really, really experts. Yeah, we have a lot of money in our projects, so we should just hire everyone.
I'm very interested in your opinion. Is it time to say the bug bounty philosophy is over?
Yeah, it might be.
And what could be the alternative?
Well, that's a pretty big question. It goes hand in hand in general with open source and sustainability and who's going to pay for everything and who's gaining the most money for us doing this. So in Curl, we're certainly discussing more in ways to why do it at all if we're only doing it for the open source community. So maybe we don't need to do bug bounties. Maybe we should just reconsider the entire thing, how we handle security problems, because it's usually not the open source community that is most sort of bothered, scared, or sort of most concerned about this. Maybe those are the big commercial companies, so maybe we should make a way so that they would be more involved for that. So, but it's, I don't have an easy answer on a quick solution to that. So I think we're going to see more experiments and tweaking of all this going forward to try different things, how we can improve lives and everything for everyone.
Our last question.
I just wondered, have you ever encountered a single submission that looked like complete AI slop but turned out to be helpful in the end?
Yes. Unfortunately. No, but again, there's so many different shades of this. So there's really bad ones and there's half bad ones and not too bad ones. So yes, some of them can actually... In one of the cases in my collection, the person actually found a bug, a legitimate problem, reported it, and then he asked the AI to explain it for him. So basically, you could see how it started out, found a bug, reported it, and then blah. So it was good, but then it got completely sidetracked and lost, and then in the end, the report actually didn't even report the bug he had in the beginning. So I don't know. Maybe it helped, maybe it didn't. But it, so since users use AI to different degrees, and so sometimes there are legitimate and real problems in there that we can fix. But there are also, you know, the normal thing when people report security problems is many times, I would say more often than not, when there's actually a bug in there. And we fix the bug, but we disagree of it being a security problem. It's just a bug. Then that's still good to fix a bug, but we don't consider it a security problem. So there's lots of different dimensions.
Thank you again for your talk.
Thank you.